Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Ask Tall Paul Blog Talk Radio Show. This is Tall Paul coming to you live from California, Southern California. And look, we've had a great response to these permaculture shows. This is going to be our fourth episode. We've had over, last time I looked, about 55,000 listeners, and that is just incredible. It's so wonderful to know that people are interested in going green, interested in sustainability, and learning more about this topic called permaculture. And as we've said before in the other episodes, that permaculture embraces, has three different ethics. The one is care of the earth, the second is care of people, and the third is return of surplus. So it's, as we look at these different elements, there's so many different ways we can look at permaculture. And ultimately, it's a design science. And you, whatever task it is that you're reviewing or looking at, you say, okay, well, if we're looking at the design and what the materials we have, we want to stack functions. So how can we use one piece, one item for multiple purposes? So that's one thing. Today, our topic is simple soil building. And, you know, in the agricultural world, in using chemicals, so non-organic ways, when people are using chemicals, it's actually severely damaging the soil. And the it's not sustainable. So how can we apply this concept of stacking functions and applying permaculture principles to build the soil in a simple way and not have to actually pay money to rebuild that soil? And how do we look at nature? How does nature build soil? So today we have Joey D'Elia on the line, and he's been on our show each week. And Joey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Paul?
It's good to hear your voice. And I love our topic, building soil, and making it simple, because everyone thinks it has, you know, there's a science to it, and there is a science to it. But if you look at nature, Mother Nature, you know, it just, nature knows how to take care of itself. And if we could just step out of the way sometimes and mimic nature, we can kind of fast forward things. But I think we're our own worst enemies sometimes. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I mean, we definitely can. I think worst enemy when it comes to a topic like this could mean something in the line of, oh, we work so hard, spend quite a deal of money sometimes, and work really, really hard with the soil and do some intense stuff and don't get the results we were dreaming of or that we thought we would get or these types of things. But when we've invested so much time, energy, and possibly money into it, and then we get discouraged, and that discouragement can become the enemy, and stop us kind of from making that positive progress to a healthy life and healthy soil and those types of things.
Exactly. So I know, like at your land, when you first moved there, there was a lot of, you know, part of the land that had been disturbed and really was not ideal. It was not as nature had intended, right?
Yeah, it was pretty beat up. One area was definitely degraded in the sense it was horse paddock, not even a paddock. Let me take that back. An area where they kept horses, so nothing grew because they had stomped and it all out, compressed the soil. And then there was a giant back lot area, probably almost an acre in size. And that was just run over by giant grading equipment, heavy grading equipment, like giant machines. And they drove in and out of there with big tractor trailers and stuff. And so, yeah, both those areas were beat up. The one area with the horses is now coming is coming back pretty is coming back well.
And I know, like a lot of our local, you know, in our these cities that we build in California, they'll come in and they'll build literally, like in Carlsbad, 10,000 brand new homes, and they bring these bulldozers in and they completely reshape. They remove a mountain, they build all these plateaus to build the homes, and you know, it's not, there's no topsoil. It's 100% whatever you want to call it. It's not something that's you grow. So then they'll bring in a little bit of topsoil to pretend like there's a growable area. And so really, to make an investment, like how does one work with what they have, especially in these cities where, you know, there's so much damage has been done to the earth. So I don't know, where should someone start?
Well, someone should start with, I think, determining what they want to do where in their yard. Kind of just a basic idea of where they were going to maybe, let's just make up a scenario. Somebody has a house, a suburban-style house, and they have a pretty big backyard, and they want to do, they have a little grass area where the kids play and stuff, and then they want to have a little veggie garden, and then they have this back area where it's kind of like, there's some trees back there, but things, they just don't want to go back there. So we've got these three areas. You've got the grass, the garden area, we're going to grow some food, and this back area that you don't know exactly what you want to do yet. So I think thinking about that is kind of the first thing. What are you going to do, or what would you like to do with the area that you have in front of you? So if it's going to be a veggie garden, well, we're going to, well, let's start with the most passive type of system. So if we were going to, we wanted to make the soil nicer, help it along, create fertility and increase the organisms that live in the soil. Let's take the back area. So when we look at it, we would like not to invest gobs of time or money into bringing up the fertility of that area. So we look at years and months, we look at a longer time frame to increase that fertility. And the one of the most passive, not, it's not the most passive, it's one of the very passive, and it can look very, it can look aesthetically pleasing, is mulch. You get a mulch, either you buy it or you have it brought, a tree, local tree company drops it off in your driveway. Sometimes they like to drop mulch from their machines, make a, these grindings. They call them chips, wood chips, but lots of times there's a lot of leaf matter in there, and that's what you kind of after too, is the more leaf matter, it makes a really good mulch that feeds the soil. And you just start spreading that in the backyard, and you just let it sit in that back area that you're not going to go to. You starting off with that, very simple, you put it down, looks nice, starts taking care of, and it does a host of other things besides bringing the bringing in that passive long-term kind of goal of fertility to that soil. It controls evaporation, so you can save some water. It also suppresses a lot of weeds, so the thicker the mulch, the more weed suppression you can get. So there's a host of other things, but those are some of the major ones. And then you're getting fertility in that soil, because now you're feeding organisms, you're feeding bugs. Things are, there's life and death things going on under that mulch layer, and it's kind of, and that's what happens in a forest. That's why forests are so healthy. They have that whole mulch layer, and they have this whole another system going on right at that layer where the leaf litter and mulch meet the soil. So then if we look at that, that's good.
But can I go to before we go on a little bit, like when I first started, I'm like, where am I? Because I hear about mulch.
Oh, yeah.
And you go to Home Depot and it's so expensive. Like, because like one bag is not enough. You need a lot of mulch, really, if you're going to cover a large area. So now I had heard in my city you could get quote unquote organic mulch. Now, I just want to say this. When I first, I got, it's free in my city. You go and you can pick it up on a Saturday and fill up your bags and fill up your truck or whatever and get it for free. But they no longer call it organic mulch, because I think what they found is, and it's really, like Joy had mentioned, if you can find a source, like someone who's an arborist, someone who does tree service in your area, look them up in the phone book or on the web or look on Craigslist, because the people who are the tree companies, they have to actually pay to get rid of this mulch, to get rid of all the tree trimmings, etc. They have to, when they take it to dump, they have to pay to dump it, and they'd rather not pay it. So back to this free mulch thing from the city, they are no longer calling it organic because so many pesticides. You really don't know where that mulch is coming from.
Right.
So I would, before we start encouraging the city sources, and I'm not discouraging, I'm just saying the step prior to going to your city is definitely trying to locate your local tree services or even a neighbor who's cutting down a tree or bushes, whatever. Hey, you mind if I have that? Because these companies that are in the tree business, like you, Joey, you're in the tree business.
That's right.
You're always trying, like, how can I get rid of this stuff? And I've heard, like, people in Oregon and Washington, there's videos on YouTube. What's that famous video? Was it Back to Eden that talks about the wood chips?
Is that, yeah, I forgot, but I think it's something along those lines.
Yeah. And their whole strategy was using the wood chips and the mulch to revitalize this soil. And I'll tell you, at your place, wasn't that, and still is, like one of the main strategies you have to replenish that soil?
That is the strategy. I do, you know, yeah, that's my main strategy.
So when you first started doing it, like Joey has an incredible source for this mulch, and so he's very, very fortunate to be in that position because he has mulch from a sort. He knows where this mulch is coming from, basically. And anyway, he had put his first batch down, and I don't even know, was it a month, a couple months later, you and I were at your place, and we pulled back the soil, just like not even an inch, and there's like earthworms. I mean, I looked at it, I'm like, oh my gosh. And the soil, there was soil there where it was once, like, I don't even know how to describe it. What was that like? What was that moment like for you? Was it as magical for you as it was for me?
It is every time. I still can't, it's still hard to believe that I can just put this stuff down and then I go back. We can talk specifically about an area, even some of these driveway areas. There was driveways here at our house that we bought, and they were hard packed with like little pea gravel, and I've just been putting mulch over it, and it's just still fascinating to go out and dig in there, and you see this little layer where it was that old, just pale, tannish kind of road or just dirt color. And you're getting that layer of that little black layer of soil forming, a little humus layer, is forming passively. We just put the mulch down. Now nature is taking it the rest of the way.
Yeah, and you look at it and you can feel the life in it, and you see it, and it's like, this is all we had to do, and I've been spending all this money at, you know, these companies. They're providing a service, obviously, but you don't need to spend a lot of money to improve the health of your soil.
That's right. When we look at it like simply, and you can spend a lot of money, but when you start spending a lot of money, just make sure you got to get the right stuff. And then you can increase, you know, sometimes you can speed up the process. And really, only time when you're really speeding up the process is when you're building compost. You know, you're making that layer. But yeah, the mulch is just fantastic. The worms come, because there's something about earthworms where they live there and then they go dormant and the eggs just sit there. And then they're waiting, you know. Lots of times for something to happen, whether it's the seasonal rains or some kind of little blanket of yumminess, which would be our mulch layer, like a little blanket over the soil. And then under that blanket is all sorts of activity. The earthworms come out and they grab a little organic matter and then they go back down into their little tunnels and And then they do the little earthworm castings everywhere. They start making their little passageways because there's something for them to eat now. So they come up to the soil surface, then they take it back down with them. They move around, they start making little corridors of their earthworm castings everywhere. You've got all these other bugs come to live. Then the lizards have something to eat, so the lizards come and live. And then all of that mulch just keeps breaking down over time, goes through a rainy season. Your soil stays moist longer because of that blanket. Just like you stay warmer when you're under the blanket. There's a lot of different things, so many beautiful things going on, and it's so passive and so just mimicking nature so much in what it does to create this ongoing fertility.
That's right, because in nature, you're in a forest, the leaves fall from the tree and they stay put. They don't move unless a wind comes and blows it, but how far is it going to go? But what do in our culture? We pay someone to cut the leaves off, and then we pay them to remove it so it'll look neat and tidy, and then we take it somewhere so we never have to see it again. But then we have to pay to bring it back after someone else tried to mimic nature by making compost or mulch. So if we could redesign our brain and kind of like rethink it and say, well, wait a minute, why are we doing that? You know, if we could just do it the natural way, which is let the leaves fall where they are. And I've heard like avocados, don't touch the leaves. Leave the leaves where they are. They love, because it's just returning the nutrients right back to where it got the nutrients from.
Yeah, we could go.
It's a form of natural recycling.
It is, and you could go on and on about the different attributes of mulch and what it does with the roots and soil temperature. So,
and I think especially like in the more arid climates, you know, where water is so, like, you know, in the Midwest, sure it rains, but, you know, they had the droughts, you know, last year so bad, and the price of food is drastically increased, and but they can't. I mean, the mulch is almost impossible because they're practicing farming methods which are contrary to what we're talking about.
Well,
it's a whole other topic, huh?
Yeah, now we're going way. Yeah, you could. There's a lot of topics like that, but I think when we go away. We like mulch, really like mulch. If we're looking at that other part of our house, where in our backyard, and we wanted to do a vegetable garden, we can start to think about some increased soil fertility, because we're going to be demanding more from that soil. We want productivity. We want these vegetables that are going to grow for a season. Some of them, we can put perennials in there, but these are going to be some annuals. So they want to get it all done in a certain amount of time because they're going to die soon. So you got to look at a good amount of minerals and some fertility in that area where you're going to grow these plants, these vegetable plants. So when you start thinking about that, you start thinking about compost. And compost can be, it doesn't have to be super expensive if you were to buy it in the stores, but when you buy things from the stores, they come from wherever they come from. The sources come from wherever the sources are to make that compost. And if you can put in the time and effort, and it's not always successful, but it's something that definitely you get better at with practice, which is building compost piles and making compost. You can get a good return on your investment of time. And you can take so many different things from your house systems whether it be leaves or grass clippings or the kitchen scraps from preparing meals and these types of things, and those can go into your compost systems. Now, once you start doing that and becoming successful at that, it's a very simple way. Once you get the methods down, which there's plenty of methods and plenty of YouTube videos and books talking about compost, but the key is to practice making it. Sometimes my piles still do something because you just keep practicing, and it becomes this great way it's a great path to simple soil fertility, because you're just taking all of these things from around your house, and maybe you tell your friends, hey, why don't you give me that stuff too, because maybe you want to make more compost. So you're taking all these inputs and you're putting them in there into this compost and making basically fertilizer on site. So you're doing a lot of great things, and there's you can only get so much kind of fancy stuff from the compost you can buy in the store, but at your house or your community garden, wherever you're building these compost piles, you can add all sorts of interesting things that you're not going to get when you buy it at the store. So you can start growing specific plants that are tough, that don't need really fertilizer, different medicinals, different plants that have a lot of minerals in them but are really tough plants that don't need fertilizer, and you can put those into your compost, and you begin, as you keep practicing this, you begin to really be able to bring fertility to those heavy growing areas, as you have enough compost, if you become very successful and you really enjoy it and you keep making more and more of it, well, you only put so much in the garden. Well, then you can start spreading it other places around your home or your community garden.
Do you have some examples of those types of plants that can help mineralize the compost? Like weeds, certain weeds?
Well, weeds can. If you can put your weeds in there. The weed thing has to do with the seeds.
Yeah, getting rid of the seeds, you mean.
And if you have seeds in there, if the weeds have gone to seed, you in that composting situation, you've got to make sure that you've got the compost pile hot enough to kill those weed seeds. So you can put the weeds in there. It's something to add later once you've gotten good at making your practiced at making compost, because there's other plants like. I think maybe there's comfrey, which is a big plant that people hear a lot about. Comfrey is a dynamic accumulator. So it pulls in a lot of nutrients out of the ground that other plants just can't access, because it's a little difficult, or this plant's just really good at doing it. And you can put those leaves from that plant into your compost, and then you break it down and make it super available, all those different minerals that were in the plant leaves of the comfrey, to your vegetable garden.
Right, because certain plants have very long tap roots that go deep down into very difficult soils, and they take those nutrients and then they utilize them, and then when you're putting them back into the compost, you can then spread it to a wider area.
And that's true. And there's just talking about that, when you said that, it made me think about earthworms.
Yeah.
So with compost is a giant subject in itself also, and so many different ways to do it. You've got to practice. The composting is practice. The mulch, it's just muscles. You're picking up it's just back. It's on the back. You got to get the mulch up into the wheelbarrow, wheel it to the back, and dump it. Now, the compost is putting the right elements together. If we're another simple solution that rivals, not in the quantity, but the simplicity of mulch, is earthworm castings and having your earthworm bin. So you have, I'm sure a lot of you have seen earthworm bins possibly, or heard about them. You can make them yourself. I've seen a lot of different people make different kinds. Usually somebody gives me one that they meet and they're not using it, or they haven't never used it, or and sometimes your local communities, I think actually your waste departments or your recycling centers, some different places, I think even the cities, lots of times they'll have these programs where you can go in for a class for what they call vermicomposting. So vermiculture is taking care of having the worms, taking care of worms and doing all sorts of nice things with them. Is that they'll give you one, or they'll sell you one at a reduced cost, these earthworm bins. And talk about something easy. You can feed them paper, you can feed them vegetable scraps. They will, and they'll eat. I think they'll eat their body weight, or
twice their
body weight.
And yeah,
it's something very fast and it's just great. And you get a batch of worm castings going, there's a whole slew of things you can do with them besides just putting them directly around each plant, which is great. You can actually start breeding so many worms that you'd actually take the worms out and put them in your garden. Because you end up with so many when you get a healthy worm bin system going, which means it can't get waterlogged. So you just want to make sure. What's that?
Yeah, I love worms, and I definitely encourage anyone to look into it. So it's vermiculture, vermicompost. But one question I have, and this won't pertain to everyone listening, but someday it might. You know, you have chickens, and I've always wondered, you know, because you can give the chickens your scrap, and that's a form of food. But you kind of want those scraps as well for the compost bin. So how do you balance that? Because I've noticed you give scraps to the chickens, but I also see food in your, you know, scrap food in your compost bins.
Yeah, we give a certain amount to the chickens, and when it looks like the chickens
are
bored with it, we take it away for a while, and we they don't get it for a little bit, or they get a little something here or there, or like with just for instance what's just happened right now, we got a watermelon, and it wasn't good on the inside. And instead of like taking this whole giant watermelon and trying to cut it all up and feed it to my worms, or just putting the whole thing in the compost pile, we just cut it in half and gave it to the chickens, and slowly they've been working on it. But then when they're down to the rind, well, then that once in a while we'll go through the chicken area and we'll just kind of clean up all the stuff that they didn't finish. And then that goes in the compost, or that goes into the worm bin.
Because either way, you are getting benefits to the chickens. I mean, because the chicken's going to eat it, and that's food for them, but then they're going to create manure, which is also nutrients that will eventually end up in the garden. So either way, you're kind of, it's a win-win. But I just wondered how you kind of balanced it, and that makes sense. So if you have a large quantity, like a watermelon that went bad or whatever, the chickens will do whatever they want with it, and then the scraps that they are not interested in, you put into the compost pile.
Right, and there's certain things that just don't, like the worms will eat like spent peas and different things like that that the birds won't really want to eat. And so you start to develop, oh, well, they don't even want this, so it's going to go straight into the worm bin. Or I have so much of this, I'm not going to dump it in the worm bin. I'm just going to go put it in the compost bin. And we have some different composting methods going on. Like we have very passive composting systems, and we have more intense ones. because I like to try to balance it all out so that there's a lot of different methods, and so you're just trying to do some that work for you is the main goal. Because, like, back to the original point of being our own worst enemy.
Yeah.
You want to keep practicing different systems to see the ones that work for you, because when something works for you, not just doing everything that your friend may be successful at, well, that may be not your thing, and you try it, you fail, well, and then you get discouraged. No, you try a different system, and you succeed, because that's what we're looking for, that success, because that's that encouragement to keep moving forward, you know, in these positive ways. So just balancing it mainly, and then balancing the food to all the different elements, to the chickens, to the compost, to this kind of compost or that kind of compost, is how we do it. You develop rhythms. That's what's so fun about permaculture and even this topic. You develop, as you keep practicing it, you just start developing all these rhythms and patterns, and things get very simple because they work. Nature works. It without all of it, nature works. It's got its patterns. It's got its systems. It's got all the things that go along and with it, in it, around it. And when we start to kind of start mimicking those and practicing those, we start to feel that natural flow, that natural pattern in our life, and that's when that simpleness comes in. And there's a lot of freedom in that. You know, thinking about 4th of July coming up, independence and freedom, that's what happens with these simple soil systems, soil fertility, and simple ways of harvesting water, simple ways of growing your vegetables. You start to find those natural rhythms and patterns, and you start to feel very good. So
yeah, and literally, like the worms, like some people might think, oh, they're bugs or something. Anybody, even if you're living in an apartment, a condo, you know, small space, you're renting a room, anybody can have a worm bin. There is no smell, and you can literally have it in your house. You don't have to have it outside. And I highly encourage everyone to look into it. And you don't have to pay money. I mean, literally, if you have an old, you know, Rubbermaid bin that you don't want to use anymore, or, you know, there's just, you can use anything for a worm bin.
Oh, yeah, just go search it, YouTube, whatever,
yep.
And you'll, the library.
Well, didn't you say in our last podcast that someone had an old bathtub they didn't want, so you're going to turn it into a worm bin?
That is correct.
Uh-huh. Did you do that? What happened?
We went and picked up the bathtubs. Now, these were giant old cast iron. They're not clawfoot tubs, but they're cast iron tubs, and we lifted them. We got them. Two of my friends came with me. We got them into our trailer, three of these giant tubs. And then I lifted one out of my trailer with my tractor and put it in place in this one area. We got it all set up, and that's as far as we got yesterday. But this is, we're scaling up, is what we're doing here, is we're scaling up our worm casting production. We're going from smaller bins. We have a Rubbermaid bin kind of system, and we have a standard worm box stacked system that you would see in the store or that you would
worm
buy.
Factory.
Yeah, a little worm factory. Actually, you know where I got that worm factory?
Where?
From you!
Ha-ha! Why?
Because
I wanted you to have it. Well, in case people don't know, I'm moving to Tipwana Farm, which is a permaculture demonstration site in San Marcos, California. It's Joey's property. If you ever have an inkling of being in California and you're going to be in Southern California, come on down, have some permaculture fun. That's what we like to call it. Like, we were there all at Joey's house yesterday. It was his birthday. Happy birthday, Joey.
Oh, thank
and
you.
I cannot tell you how much fun it was. And I had brought my friend from high school. I mean, we've known each other for, I don't know, 30 years or so. And what an incredible day we just had. It was, like, so much fun. And every time we go, there's something new. Right? Every day,
oh,
there's something new.
Every day we got something new going on. Like, I just, like today the new thing was I got home from work and a pipe broke and there's water shooting out. So that but, you know.
That was fun, huh?
That was fun.
And yesterday he had, you know, three baby chicks, adorable, you know. And so it's just so neat when you, it's just different from what I was raised. I was raised in the city. I had no exposure to any of this kind of stuff. And I am thoroughly enjoying it. So these worms, that's something that I started with years ago. I've always, you know, I have all the books about it. You don't really need the books now that you've got YouTube and things. You can learn all that for free. And once you start, you can, you know, they multiply and they'll eat. As much as you feed them, they'll keep growing and growing and expanding and expanding. So if you don't have a lot of food to feed them, they won't get out of hand. They'll just live to their environment. And so when Joey wants to upscale, I mean, he can go for it. Like, he has a horse on his property. All that manure can be eaten by the worms.
The worms
will eat everything.
They do. And that, speaking of that, with that bathtub, is the upsizing of our worm bin and putting more things in there, just all sorts of things, because you can do the same thing with the compost I was talking about when you put different plants in there. You can put the weeds in with, you can put any of the plants in, clippings and all sorts of stuff. You can even put mulch. You can even feed the earthworms mulch. And, you know, we have lots of mulch. So lots of times I use mulch for many different things, not just putting on the ground. Feed, make place, like this bathtub, for instance, is going to get full of horse manure and mulch.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the mulch will act as a bedding because the worms don't like to be saturated in water. But it's incredible use, and I'm very excited to be, you know, watching that grow, and we'll have to hear more about it.
Yeah, I'm going to make a little video here pretty soon, and then
So it sounds like we've been talking about, like, a lot of different topics, but it all is related to the topic of our show, which is simple soil building. So worms are part of it. Mulch is part of it. Composting is part of it. Just letting the leaves lie. You don't need to be tidy. You know, there's just all this helps, and it's all free, basically. You can spend money on it, you know, but you don't have to.
Well, I have a hot...
Go on.
Well, sorry, I interrupted you, but...
No, go for it.
Oh, okay. So you bringing it back to that idea of simple soil fertility, I got something I have thought about, but I kind of forgot it because I was thinking about these main things like mulch and compost and worm casting. There's a whole nother level, and it's a very passive one. And this is what I was kind of, now that I think about it, this is what I was kind of inferring in the very beginning when I was talking about the super... or the great passiveness of using mulch to create soil fertility. Well, there's another method that's very simple and has to do with timing, and that's sowing seeds. Let's say you have a giant area. Let's go back to the little yard. Say we don't have the mulch, and we have this backyard area we want to deal with, and maybe it's pretty large, and there's a bit of a weed problem, and we don't want to use poisons. We will use the weed whacker, let's say that. We don't want to use any poisons. Well, you can go and learn about different seeds that grow at certain times of the year, and you can go out and just throw those seeds out into that area of dirt with weeds and stuff. So you're throwing these seeds out at the right time of the year for when they're supposed to grow. And then those plants start to germinate when the weeds start to grow. And now the weeds have a competition. Because when we understanding simple soil fertility, it's nice to understand the weed function, which is a reparative mechanism that nature has going for it. It puts out these weeds, or these weeds germinate because of the condition of the soil. And usually when weeds germinate, it's because the condition of the soil is under some type of stress. So these tough things come in, which are usually pokey. They come in and germinate. When the soil is too hard and compacted, you get a certain type of weed that has a strong taproot to break up that soil. When you have soil that's so loose because it's been messed up and it's all falling apart and everything, you get weeds with these fine hairs, root hairs that grow to try to hold together to repair what's going on and bring it back into a balance. So looking out at weeds, weeds are part of simple soil fertility. They give you little windows into what is a problem with the soil, possibly, what deficiencies it may have minerally, types of things. After a fire, only certain weeds germinate. And they're the reparative weeds for that situation. So when you look at these areas and we're thinking of this passive soil, kind of simple soil fertility, and you've got the weeds everywhere, you can start sowing in different seeds into that. A little more, not so weedy, let's say. They're weedy because they're going to compete with those weeds, but they're different. And usually you can get a lot of some pea plants and vetch, these viney plants. They sprout real easy, and they climb everything. So they start to smother other stuff. And then you are the one putting in succession of species. And it can be a bit complicated, but once you learn it and understand it, it becomes very simple. And then when you actually go and do it and you see it in action, it makes total sense. And you can go replicate that basically anywhere around the world because the reparative functions of nature are the same everywhere. Plants do the same thing for a host of different conditions that go on with the soil. And then when you do cut down the weeds, let's say you go in there and stuff's kind of died, and you cut down the weeds, you just fertilized, you just mulched the soil with those weeds that the soil wants. It wants those weeds on top, but you also incorporated some stuff that you grew. Because maybe it's just too insane to put that much mulch down for you at this time. That's a method, and it's a very simple one. And you will create fertility.
And this whole point is that, you know, when the soil's disturbed like that, no one went out there and planted weed seeds. The weed seeds are there in nature, meaning this year, so Joy is recommending you go out and you plant new types of seeds like legumes, which help to fix nitrogen in the soil, et cetera. And, you know, we'll have future episodes about all of this. But it might not grow this year because the weed is the stronger competitor. But next year, because the other things were working, nature will take care of itself. Eventually, those weeds can't compete. Like when we've talked about developing and forming these food forests, as the different layers start to grow, your vines and the mid-canopy, the upper canopy, et cetera, these weeds don't have a chance to grow anymore because there's competition for sunlight, et cetera. So don't get discouraged. Your seeds will come. They will work for you. Because if anyone listening has ever had a garden, they have weeds, and you didn't plant them. They just come up. And it's because Mother Nature's trying to repair that soil. And when we add the other things that we want to make it more quick, like the dynamic accumulators and the nitrogen fixers, which we'll learn about some other day, then, and this is the design science of permaculture, it's like, okay, well, we want to do this. This is our goal. What's the best way to go about it? So I think we've really gotten a lot of really good tips. We have 15 more minutes. If there's anyone who's on the line and would like to call in, the number is 347-838-9986. Otherwise, we'll just keep on talking. So coming up, this reminds me, I'm trying to help promote an upcoming conference that's next March in Temecula, California. So Southern California, sunny, beautiful California that time of year. And it's called Permaculture Voices. And the top leaders in sustainability and permaculture and, you know, people who really care about improving the planet are coming together for an incredible conference. And if you can, go to permaculturevoices.com, get more information, share that information on your Facebook so that people who have the means that can come to California can come and really learn from the cutting-edge leaders in the field. And, you know, we're very excited to be part of that. And, you know, I mean, Joey, what do you think about this? I mean, the names that are coming are just incredible.
Yeah, if you're looking for a real, like, kick in the pants to be encouraged and get some enthusiastic kind of camaraderie, too. Because let me tell you, when you go to some of these events, the people are charged already. They're excited, just the participants, not alone these great speakers and people that are doing some of the work all around the world. They're the people that are attending are active. They're interested. They're engaged, and you make really good friends because they have this passion. It seems to be a constant. And the fascinating part is, too, where you don't have just one type of demographic. You have young people, older people, middle-aged people, men, women. It's not like just men or just women. It's this whole different group. You got, and then you get like ranchers and regular gardeners, and you get kind of the more hippie-ish kind of. Then you get them. You get it all, and you make friends sometimes that you wouldn't think you would make because you have this common interest in the earth and in the care of it. And you find out actually that these people that care about the earth actually, despite whatever they're wearing or whatever area they come from, they care about people too.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally... It's so, like... Even if you're an absolute beginner and you don't know anything about it, the people, I mean, they're so willing to share not only their knowledge but their passion and love. It really boils down to love. And, I mean, it sounds so silly, but, I mean, every time I go to one, even our local conferences or a local class or something, you begin, it's a community is developing, and you look forward to seeing these people. And it's like, normally you wouldn't have met them because they're, you know, just not in the same circles. But this is bringing everyone together, and it's with passion and with a collaborative spirit, you know. And people are helping people with no expectation of return. It's like, you're helping because you want to help. Not because you're going to come to my house, aren't you? And, you know, I don't know. It's just, I've had an incredible experience as long as I've been involved, which is about a year and a half or so. And, right, Joey? I mean, how many people have we met together that are just characters, including ourselves, totally, right?
Well,
well, I don't know about you, but I'm a
character. I'm working on my character. It's a work in progress.
So, and that's, like, I think I coined the term permaculture fun. It is so much fun for me just to meet. Like, we were at Joey's birthday party last night, and there was, like, so many different types of people and children, and it's just fun. And it wasn't all, I mean, we had food and all that, but Joey's out there digging a ditch I mean, Joey works, works, works. But that's inspiring, too, because it makes me want to work, too. And traditionally, I'm not like that. I'm not much into getting dirty. Have you noticed, Joey?
I noticed, but you can't avoid it now. There's just so much mulch here. You'll have to get a little dusty.
There's mulch everywhere, but, you know, I love the mulch because I've witnessed what it has done for your property. And I'm telling you, like, at my house, I have trees, fruit trees are my thing. I'm really into fruit trees. And I grow tomatoes. You've all heard this story. But a lot of my fruit trees were in boxes. And you can grow fruit trees in a container, but it's difficult. And it really stresses the tree. And there comes a point where it's like the tree's either going to die because it's just not natural to be kept in a box like that, or you're going to set it free. So I had all these trees in boxes, and I'm like, it's time. So I gave them to Joey to put in his land. And literally, wasn't it like in 1 week or maybe a day, but all these citrus are blooming, and they're just completely so happy, right?
Oh, they're happy, and the chickens pay attention to them and go and
they eat
fertilize
the
them.
Sure, fertilize them, and I'm telling you, it's just for me so it's life giving to see life being given because we care. We're trying, you know, to this is what it's meant to be. You know, like you're growing your own food and you're together helping one another. And I just think when you go to a grocery store and you're so removed from the process of how that got to you, I mean, I don't know, are we really that grateful, you know, for the guys that are growing all the wheat to make your crackers and your cookies and all that stuff? I mean, do we even think about that poor guy that's sitting out there growing that wheat? But when you have to grow it yourself, boy, that really gives you a huge appreciation from where that food comes from.
Yeah, and when you think about it that way, it's like it can get gets pretty intense. But that's why you go to the Permaculture Voices, you know.
Yeah, and the leaders, they're just real people. I mean, every one of us has a dimension to this. We each have a skill and some sort of, skill, I guess, that we can share with everyone. That's going to help make a difference.
It definitely helps make a difference. And then that's what you get when you go to some of these convergences and conferences, because they have to do with permaculture, is you get that different skill set and you start to see, whoa, this person really likes this. They also like growing some food, but they're really into this, they're really into that, and you start to realize, oh, I enjoy that, and that, and maybe not so much that other thing, and then you see the diversity, and that diversity is what's represented in nature to infinity, almost, basically, because we haven't discovered everything that's going on in the soil at all. Or even some of the things how trees do certain things is still a mystery to science. You have this thing that I go back to, and it was part of our topic was simple. And whether you're building soil simply or you're doing something, and you're looking at these simple methods, you start to meet people and you start to hear stories. And the stories usually have very simple beginnings. And from hearing more stories about simple beginnings, you get to understand and share what my teacher Jeff Lawton says. You have these happy accidents and sad little failures. And you in that simple approach and that simple beginning is where you start, and nature starts very simply, and then gets quite complicated. The interactions get intensely complicated, but it flows so beautifully. And that's what our lives start to do as we take these simple steps to taking permaculture as a design science and applying it to the different dimensions of our life, even going to a conference that has to do with permaculture and has to do with people looking to take care of the earth and doing some monumental work that these speakers are doing, and meeting people that are sitting next to you that started in this simple way, and some of them may have something very neat going on. My family and me had very simple beginnings. Like Paul, I started out in a suburb, never saw food grow. I don't think my mom didn't have a vegetable garden or anything. And none of my neighbors did that I ever saw. So that's a simple beginning. And the one we just that we started with is when I had my own family was very simple. We lived in a little trailer park, and we had the tiniest yard you can imagine. And then that's how we started. And I haven't been a tree person forever or a plant person forever. And I didn't grow up on a farm or grow up, you know, with intimate relationship with plants or nature. So we have those simple things.
So it's never too late. It's never too late. And you really don't know what broccoli tastes like until you eat it from your own yard. And just yesterday, Joey reaches over, like we're sitting on this, he put in a new sitting area in his, literally in his garden, two or three different little, sofa, benches, outdoor furniture. And it was so pleasant. There was a nice breeze coming through. And he literally reaches over and he grabs lettuce out of the garden and eats it, and it's like paradise. You know,
yeah.
You have no clue what it's like until you start. If you can't do it yourself, if you don't think you can do it, go and see if your community has a community garden. Talk to your friends. See if they have a garden. And just, find someone that has a tomato plant. Eat a tomato off of a tomato plant instead of out of the grocery store. And then that might just change your mind. That might give you the courage to just say, oh, you know what? That was pretty darn good. How can I get involved? And if it just means watching someone garden and helping that person, that's enough to get started. And you will eventually learn that what your role is going to be, you know. We're not saying you're going to be on the radio. You might be. Anyone's welcome. If you're someone out there that's a specialist or has some sort of information that you feel would benefit our listeners, please email me at asktallpaul@gmail.com. I would love to have you on the show. You know, give me your cell phone or your telephone number, and we'll talk about it. And you know, we're going to be adding many more people to the show. Next week we have Diego Footer. He will be with us on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific. He is the founder of Permaculture Voices, this premier conference that's happening next March 2014. And he's going to, talk to us and tell us what inspired him to be a leader himself. I mean, he's the one that has gathered these people, and it's very exciting to be able to talk to him. And then Paul Wheaton is going to be online. We haven't scheduled a date yet, but Paul Wheaton is the Duke of Permaculture. Can you imagine? He's going to be on my show.
Woo!
Oh, this is big time, I tell you. Right, Paul? So Paul's a great friend. I haven't known him that long, but I feel like he's a friend. And Paul has the largest internet presence in the world for permaculture. He's absolutely a leader in helping to spread the word. And he's really interesting. He does a lot of experimentation, and he questions, the stuff that's out there that we're sold in the media about certain topics. And his website is permies, permies.com. Very interesting, lots of information. You should definitely go there. Also visit Joey's website at fruittreeforest.com, And one of my websites is permaculturecentral.com. I'm just getting started. There's not much there. But I'd like to eventually get anyone who has a permaculture website or websites of interest, if you email me at asktallpaul.com, we will try to include your site on my permaculturecentral.com. And my other website is asktallpaul.com. All right. So other than that, Joey, do you have any final words of wisdom for us?
Just start.
Just start. I love that, and I totally agree. So we will see everyone next time. Joey's our regular on Thursday nights, although next Thursday is the 4th of July, and I believe we're going to take a holiday. What do you think, Joey?
I was thinking about taking a holiday, but I was thinking, and I was also thinking of some type of Independence Day kind of thing, and having it to do with the independence of growing your own food and creating permaculture systems.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can definitely have a show. We can, you know, but just keep your eyes on my channel at Ask Tall Paul. I'm probably going to be changing the name of the channel at some point because, you know, really I'm so interested in permaculture, and I've discovered this is my passion. And rather than have two separate shows, I think I'm going to start focusing just on this and bring the leaders in permaculture together so that we have a place that I want to promote people and the things that they're doing, because we need to learn from each other. Not one person's the expert. I mean, everyone has something to share because we're all experimenting. We're all trying new things. And, you know, if we hear one thing that Joey could say something and, you know, he's like, oh, you know, Sylvia could be listening. Like, oh my gosh, Joey just said something. And now this is the one thing, you know, that's going to help her with her progression with the experimentation that she's been doing. So we all learn from one another, and I'm glad you're all listening. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next time. Night.
Good night.